right, y'all, here we go. Here we go. Gotta find all my stuff. Pull my pant leg down. So all I know, and I first of all, I just have to say thank you for the prayer. And for those of you watching, to know that our chaplains and our prayer practitioners, they get the topic for the talk, but we don't ever discuss. We let Spirit do its work, and essentially, Anne, you just did my talk, so see y'all. No, we're good. All I know is time won't wait. We are talking about time today. If you're watching this, let's see, later or earlier, I'm not sure which one, if you forgot to set your clocks back and you've been waiting for this service for an hour, finally it's here. The rest of you who've slept in and don't care, here, good morning. Good to see you. We'll see you when you watch us. What an interesting concept, daylight saving time. First of all, time is a human construct. We know that. And time and space, it keeps us from utter chaos, essentially. And it keeps us in line with being able to communicate, give you a service at a certain time on a certain day. And we're used to that construct. But the it still baffles my mind that we just simply, in the springtime, lose an hour. In the fall, we gain an hour. I know there was a purpose for it at one time, and it's a little mind-boggling to where I am now in my view of the universe and how it works. Time doesn't wait for the hour that we lose, the hour that we gain. It doesn't really do a whole lot for us, except maybe interrupt our sleep. So the concept of time, losing time, not having enough time, regretting the time that we didn't take advantage of, as Anne said in her prayer, for those places in our lives that we didn't say yes to something when we down the road went, yeah, that would have been cool if I'd have done that. I want to start with a story. I'm going to set these down. Of one such occasion, I was 17 years old. I was in high school in Western Michigan, and our theater group, I remember now, I think there might have been about maybe 15 of us that took a field trip, I think it was 10 days, to New York City, a theater trip to go to Broadway, see Broadway shows. We had some arrangements to get backstage with a not-yet-known, well-known actor then named Richard Gere. This was 1980. Yes, I'm dating myself. It was 40 years ago. And we went to New York, and we had split off kind of just doing some sightseeing, walking around Midtown, and I think there were maybe about 8 of us together that day. And we came around the corner, and this beautiful brown brick building and this very understated but stately marquee, and a little plaque on the wall, and the plaque on the wall said Carnegie Hall. And it was kind of like, oh, you know, there's no big Broadway lights on Carnegie Hall that say, you know, big arrows saying this is Carnegie Hall. Of course, the old joke is, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. So there we were. And looking at the doors, looking at, you know, just these very low-key, understated, who's playing there next, I don't remember who it was. And somebody in our group said, do you think we can go in? And somebody, you know, they're checking the doors and that kind of thing, and pulled one of the doors open, and lo and behold, there we were, walked into the lobby. There was no doorman, no security guard, no nothing. And so it was kind of a tippy-toey kind of thingy into the lobby. And we went to the left side. I remember it being on the left side of the building, and there were some more doors painted white, this beautiful, gorgeous old woodwork. You know, this place was built in the 1880s. And somebody opened the next door in our group. And there we were in the what was originally called the Chamber Music Hall. It's a very small theater, small hall. It seats a little bit less than 300 people. And the lights were on. The doors were unlocked. There was nobody in the room. And somebody or a couple of people in our group said, wow. Down on the stage, the only thing that's really got any room for it was a concert grand piano. And somebody said, Kit, go play. And the first thing in my head was not the, well, let's back up a little bit. The first thing in my head was, no, we're going to get in trouble. That was my upbringing. No, we're going to get in trouble. Don't do that. And somebody said in the group, all they can do is ask us to leave. That's really all they can do is ask us to leave if it's a problem. And I, you know, I'm like, well, shouldn't we ask somebody? Shouldn't we find somebody? No. So they all went and sat in the first few rows of this little theater. And I walked up two or three steps onto the stage and sat down at this concert grand piano and played. The stage lights were on. The house lights were semi-down. They weren't dark. It was as if somebody, they maybe had a rehearsal and they all went to lunch and they just left everything up. So I played in Carnegie Hall when I was 17 years old. I love being able to tell that story for a couple of reasons. About, number one, here's the principle of time, of not regretting something. I said yes when the fear was like, we're going to get in trouble. The underlying yes was not, I don't deserve to be here, because there was a part of me that said, yeah, this is my place to be here. It was the conditioning and the paradigms of I'm gonna get in trouble. They weren't gonna get in trouble. I was gonna get in trouble. I don't know by who. But it was the underlying yes. And here's the principle. There's lesson number one today about being able to always be in the right place at the right time. That was in the blurb that I put in for this talk today. How do we get to that place where we always know, or we are confident that we are always in the right place at the right time? Lesson number one is we say yes. We say yes to the inspiration. We say yes to the intuition. We say yes to this little nudge, even though it might not make sense in the moment. There's a thing you've probably heard about. It's called synchronicity. It was a term developed by Carl Jung. And it is the, I'll actually read you the official synchronicity is a concept first introduced by Carl Jung, which holds that events are meaningful coincidences if they occur with no obvious causal relationship, yet seem to be meaningfully related. So it was synchronicity that happened that day. And some people, when I tell this story, some people would like to say it was fate. It's like, Kit, you're a musician. Man, it was just fate. You belong there. You belong there when, you know, that was your deal. Fate, to me, is a concept that something outside of us has a plan for us that we have no say in. So I'm not big on the whole fate idea, just so you know. That's my personal belief. Just telling you. My experience from that is, as Anne talked about in the reading this morning from Ernest Holmes, as Anne talked about in her prayer, we have a relationship, a causal relationship with Spirit, with God. It is in us, it is through us, it is expressing as us. So synchronicity, yes. Synchronicity was some moments that we happened to be walking around the corner, walked in, and there's Carnegie Hall. The door happened to be open, we walked in, there happened to be piano on the stage. All those synchronous moments happened. And we put meaning around it. That's what we do as humans. We put all kinds of meaning around it. When I tell this story, other people say it might have been luck. I don't believe in luck either. Which brings me to principle number two, or lesson number two. You've heard it said, we make our own luck. And all that really means is we get practice at paying attention to saying yes. Lesson number one. And how do we do that? We say yes. We practice saying yes. One of the things that I get a lot of, the question that comes up often is, how do I know if it's intuition? And how do I know if it's ego? And my simple answer to that is, if it's intuition and it is prompting you to do something, that something harms no one. There is good in it for everybody, and it does no harm. Most of the time, that little nudge won't make sense, but when you get in the practice of it, you start to recognize there is a flow, there is a pattern, there is something that you are in, that we are in, relationship with, and it's a harmonious relationship, and it is not one that has a lot of angst. It doesn't have a lot of anger. In fact, it doesn't have any anger. It has this deep knowing, this deep connection within us that just says, and we say it all the time, I don't know why I know this, or I don't know why I should do this or say this, but there was something in me that said I needed to. When we get in practice with that is when we start to realize I'm always in the right place at the right time, as we sang together this morning. That's why I picked it, by the way, so you know that. We're in the right place at the right time. But there is, you start to realize there is a very synchronous relationship with that energy. And what do I mean by practice that? It is the little things, like you're driving somewhere, you're driving to the store, and you get this little thing that says, go this way today. And instead of going, oh, I don't know what that's about, I'm going to keep going because this is the way to go home. But playing with it and practicing with it is saying, okay, I'm just going to see what happens when I go down the road today. If I go this other way, what's going to happen? Many times, there's not going to be something like you turn the corner and there's a great big billboard and said, here's your sign. No, it's you are being in conscious relationship with spirit. And so the law of spirit is like, okay, cool. I'm giving you this information. You're following this information. Here's the next step. Here's the next step. Here's the next step. You may find out later that turning down that road meant you didn't get in a car wreck up the street. You find out later there was a wreck. Which is another principle, the word accidents. I don't speak of car wrecks as accidents. I have gotten to a place in my life where I believe in the synchronous universe. And I call them wrecks, or we call them collisions. If we talk about just from a purely the physics standpoint, a collision is when there are two entities trying to occupy the same space at the same time. And what do? They collide. I had an experience of a nonviolent collision a few years ago, just backing out of my driveway with another car, and it was a very narrow driveway, and I was doing everything to be really safe. I'm checking all my mirrors, and I'm doing it, and it's up against this high rock wall on one side of the driveway, so I'm being really careful. So I'm watching the road, and it goes, the car next to me, I just went right down the side of it, took out the driver's door and the mirror and the whole thing. Two objects trying to occupy the same space at the same time. Collision. Did I think it was an accident? No, it wasn't. My attention was somewhere else. So that brings us to the third lesson in, well, how do we get to this place where we feel like we're always in the right place at the right time? That car wreck, the fender bender, the taking the door off that other car. I didn't take it off. It just really dented it. Did a lot of damage. Going very, very slowly. I didn't see it as an accident. I didn't see it as a test from the universe that said, hey, you know, this is, you didn't do this and you weren't thinking the right way. You weren't moving your thoughts in the right direction. No, it was a clear, the lesson to me in that moment was, you were looking out this side and you caught this side. End of story. Wasn't because I was a bad person, wasn't because I was doing anything wrong. It was just simply my attention was somewhere else. Even though my intention was, I'm not going to hit this car, I was still sending out energy that said, I might hit this car. And I did. So the next lesson that I have about us, what can we do? What's our practice to feeling like we're always in the right place at the right time? Is to recognize that when we play with spirit, I like to call it playing with the light, when we realize we start getting in this beautiful dance, this very conscious dance, those synchronous moments start to show up. We start to notice things like the full moon last night, the blue moon, actually, last night. We notice the stars. We notice a spectacular sunrise or a sunset. Or we see, as I did yesterday, with we had a bunch of trick-or-treaters at our house, some little itty-bitties, little ones, just adorable. And those of you that know my wife and I, we have 5 blow-up dragons in our yard, and they're on Facebook, and you can find them. But to see those little itty-bitties coming up and looking at these dragons with wonder and awe and joy and getting their pictures taken, those are moments of that bliss, that beautiful dance with spirit, of knowing absolutely we are in the right place at the right time. Just to see that. Just to see that little piece in the grander scheme of whatever is going on in the world right now, in the divisiveness and a lot of expressed hate. Our playing with spirit, our grounding ourselves in love, our standing in the truth of knowing that there is a benevolent presence in this world. And that benevolent presence has given us this thing called love, and it has imbued us with it, and it has also given us that thing called free will that gives us the choice to say, I'm not going to pay attention to that. Whatever my upbringing, whatever my conditioning, whatever I was taught, whatever kind of painful experience I might have gone through when I was young enough to be impressionable by that, it does not ever cover up the fact that at the heart of every one of us, there is that place that has never been harmed. There is that place that has never been abandoned, that place that is always unconditionally loved by that unconditionally loving presence. And we don't do this alone. That's the fourth lesson that I have today about this. Because even in those moments where we might be out taking a morning walk, and we see that beautiful sunrise, and there's nobody else around to share it with, and we pull out our cell phone and we take a picture of it just for our own memory, somebody had the intelligence given by spirit to create a cell phone, to create a lens, a camera. Somebody had the intelligence and took the yes, the inspiration, the intuition to act on a yes and say, I have this idea to invent this thing called the internet. I can share this picture. So even when we think we are absolutely, we are absolutely isolated and alone, we are not. Because the house that we live in, the car that we drive, the clothes that we wear, the food that we eat involved other people for us to experience it. And there is enough. There is always enough. So we don't do this alone. If I go back to the story of Carnegie Hall, if I had been there by myself and seen that plaque on the wall that said Carnegie Hall, I might have just said, wow, cool. I don't know that at 17 years old and all of the conditioning in my head that said, don't open that door, you're getting in trouble, I probably would not have gone in. And that's not to say that there was any coercion. There was no forcefulness. There was an invitation, because the people that I was with at that time knew me as a musician, knew me as a composer, knew me as kind of an extension of one of these pianos, because that's how they saw me in most every situation. Everything had to do with me sitting behind a piano. That's how I expressed myself. So those other people were there supporting, just as we do in this community here, for all of us, for our prayer people, our chaplains, our crew, our staff, our musicians. We support each other because we see each other for who we are as God in expression. So I want to tell you right now, those of you who may be feeling isolated, more isolated than normal, tune in here. Reach out to somebody. Pick up the phone. No Facebook message, nothing like that. Pick up the phone and call somebody and just say, hey, I want to hear your voice. And oh, by the way, I love you. That's powerful. I feel like I got a little off track, but I didn't really. It's all, there it is. There's my stuff. See? The other story I wanted to share with you this morning involved other people in those synchronous moments. When my wife Cynthia and I got married, we were not actually planning on getting married. It was more of an elopement. We were traveling to the Pacific Northwest. I had some gigs. And on our changing planes in Las Vegas in 2013, there was some news that we got very early in the morning that some things had changed in 2013, and the don't ask, don't tell policy was repealed. And at that time, if you were a federal employee, which my wife was, and you wanted to get married in a state that already recognized same-sex marriages, the federal government would support it, which meant that if we got married, she could cover me under her insurance and all those other things that married people get benefit of. So we got up to Seattle, and we were going into Canada for a few days for a little vacation, and on that little trip, we thought, well, how are we going to do this? How can we do this? What are the logistics to happen here? We came back, and I was playing that Sunday at the Center for Spiritual Living in Seattle, very, very large center, two services, and between services, my wife was standing at my merch table and doing her thing. Thank you, Cynthia. And talked to one of the singers in the band and said, Lisa, we're going to get married this week, and according to Washington state law, we got to have two witnesses and a minister. She said, I'll be right back. And it was 5 minutes. And she said, okay, we got a minister. I'll be one of your witnesses, and here's our other friend that will be a witness. Great. Oh, and we need a place to do it. Hang on, I'll be right back. She went to the guitar player in the band, because she said, James has a party. He and his wife has a party every 4th of July on up there, lake north of Seattle. So his band's going to be playing, and there'll probably be, you know, maybe 70 or so people, maybe 50 people there. So let me check. James says, let me check with my wife. Sure. Come have your wedding at our place. So there were a lot of people involved, but there was also the synchronous moment of spirit that we were in the absolute right place at the right time for that to happen. As it turned out, Monday morning was July 1st, with a three-day waiting period in Washington State. That meant we were getting married on the 4th of July, and we were leaving town the next day on the 5th of July, so now or never. It also turns out that the minister who agreed to meet with us and talk with us, and before he, you know, he said, I'll do it, but I want to meet with you, and I want to get to know you a little bit first. Also turns out he goes to this party every year, too, dressed as Uncle Sam. And he said, I have to let you know, I usually go to this party dressed as Uncle Sam. If you don't want me to, I won't. And we said, oh, yeah, we do. So within just a few minutes' time, we had a wedding with a band, with food, with a minister on a lake named Lake Serene, by the way, north of Seattle, with a bunch of people that we had just met. And it was the most joyful, God-inspired, God-present moments that I have ever had in my life. We trusted. We took that little leap out that said, all we got to do is ask. And that's the thing. All you have to do is ask. If you're getting, and you should be, because that's how things work, you're getting information and guidance in every moment of your life. And if you're not clear on what that is, ask. Say, what's next? Affirm. Hey, I do know, I'm clear on this. I affirm that any information, any guidance that I'm getting is crystal clear and I know what to do next. Let that become a mantra. I know what to do in every single moment. In every single moment, I know what to do because I surround everything that I do with love. Make that your mantra. And the other last little lesson here for being in the right place at the right time is a gratitude practice. Ernest Holmes says, an attitude of gratitude is most salutary because it bespeaks the realization that we are in heaven now. Not down the road, not yesterday, right now. Right now is all we got. If we're talking about time and being in the right place at the right time all the time, all we have to do is affirm, I am. I am in the right place at the right time, doing the best I know how to do with the level of consciousness that I have right now. And I continue to work on my consciousness so that I become even more aware of the infinite intelligence and the unconditional love that surrounds me, moves through me, and expresses as me every single second of my life. And I can know that and affirm that for everyone around me as well. Back to this chaos or the appearance of chaos. Believe it or not, we are in the right place at the right time. We wouldn't be here otherwise. If you reflect just in your lifetime, no matter what age you are right now, the firsts that have happened in your life, the changes that have happened in society, in politics, in spirituality, in consciousness, blows my mind. Absolutely blows my mind sometimes when I think of that in my lifetime alone. The progress we have made, the comfort zones we have gently and sometimes not so gently pushed our way out of to get to that new level of expression. I can stand up here today in 2020 and talk to you about being gay, being married legally in this country. And for the most part, not too much of an issue. But I'm also mindful of where I live and mindful of the people that haven't quite gotten there yet. So I practice gratitude knowing that when I do my work, when we do our work to stay grounded, absolutely grounded in a benevolent presence that imbues everything. It gives me the courage to keep saying yes, to keep moving out of my own comfort zone, to stand up and say, you know what? I am a child of God. Everybody else is too. Don't often act like it. A lot of people are not acting like children of God right now. And so it is my invitation and also a little bit of a push that we keep moving our consciousness in the direction of love. That's what we're here to be. So as we go into the meditation, there's something that I do want to share with you, again from Ernest Holmes. And I'll read it to you. First of all, Ernest Holmes, he was born in 1887. He died in 1960. So he lived through the first pandemic, World War I, World War II, Korean War, beginning of the Vietnam War. And he wrote this at the beginning of World War II. And it's still very applicable right here and right now. And it is called A Prayer for My Country. Believing in the divine destiny of the United States of America and in the preservation of liberty, security, and self-expression, I offer this, my prayer for my country. I know that divine intelligence governs the destiny of the United States of America, directing the thought and the activity of all who guide its affairs. I know that success, prosperity, and happiness are the gifts of freedom and are the divine heritage of everyone in this country, everyone. I know that success, prosperity, and happiness are now operating in the affairs of every individual in this country. I know that divine guidance enlightens the collective mind of the people of this country. I'm going to say that again. I know that divine guidance enlightens the collective mind of the people of this country, causing it to know that economic security may come to all without the loss of either personal freedom or individual self-expression. I know that no one can believe or be led to believe that freedom must be surrendered in order to ensure economic security for all. The all-knowing mind of God contains the answer to every problem which confronts this country. I know that every leader in this country is now directed to this all-knowing mind and has the knowledge of a complete solution to every problem, and each is compelled to act upon this knowledge to the end that abundance, security, and peace shall come to all. And I know that this spiritual democracy shall endure, guaranteeing to everyone in this country personal liberty, happiness, and self-expression. And so it is. Amen. So I invite you to let those words flow over you, in and through you. And this is my prayer for this nation and for our world. I know that there is that one presence. I feel it to the depth of my being. That despite any appearance of chaos, there is peace unfolding. Despite every expression of hate and intimidation and fear, what I know is that there is a soul crying for love. And I pray and I move my consciousness into that one mind, speaking to that place in the heart of every individual, that they may not be able to see it for themselves yet, but knowing, speaking to that place that has never been harmed, never been abandoned, never been hurt. I speak to that place with the truth of knowing that love does heal. And I speak to that place for the allowing of that love to wash over everything and through everyone, because we know there are people that have come long before us that have said, hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. That is the only way that it works. That is spiritual law, people. So I breathe into that law, that truth that there is only love happening. There is only divine intelligence happening right now. And that moving forward from this day forward, from this point in time, knowing now, the only thing happening besides love is infinite intelligence, and it knows so much more than any individual on this planet does. There is a divine pattern for harmony and peace. And yes, we have free will to say, no, I don't want it. But we also have free will and the impulsion to say yes to it. And so I hold that now. I affirm that now for every person on this planet, not just in this country, but every person on this planet. That immutable law that only knows yes. I turn these words over now to that law. Grateful, so grateful to know it to the core of my being. That love prevails and peace prevails. And I know and affirm for anybody that the moment the fear arises, the worry, the concern, it's just a moment of taking a breath and going right back to that place and holding that ground, holding that, and I command and demand the law to hold that ground with us. That love and infinite intelligence are the only things happening right now. I affirm peace because I know peace. I affirm love because I know love. So I just let these words be. So join me in saying, and so it is.